Hey guys, welcome to season 9 of Interviews with the Hunting Masters podcast. I want to start off by saying thank you for all the reviews, the comments, and the questions that you guys send in. I do this to help others, and it means a lot to me that you're involved. And also, it helps me keep this podcast free and helps me keep this podcast at the top of the charts. With your help, I've been able to grow this podcast to one of the number one podcasts in big game hunting. I also want to give a big shout out to Sneak Tech Sneak Boots for being the number one sponsor of this podcast and helping me keep it free. So thank you, and let's roll into the next episode. Hey, so we're back on with Robbie Denham, and he is going to share with us some stories. We're going to do a little campfire session here, and listen to some of his most memorable hunts or his aha moment. Thanks for taking the time and share this with us, man. How are you?
Yeah, you bet, John. Thanks for having me back on.
For sure. So basically I asked you to come back on and to share one of your most memorable hunts or something that you, a hunt that maybe taught you something about hunting mule deer or something that kind of changed the way you hunt. Or maybe it's just your most outrageous hunt. So if you could share that with us.
Yeah, you betcha, dude. And this one probably falls into the most outrageous category. It's really the strangest hunt I've ever been on. And you know, I'll tell you some of the elements that went into it that make me think that way. But it does have a moral. And I, on our last podcast, you know, you'd asked me about what are some of the most important things I've learned that have helped me take big mule deer. And to me, it was one of them was just believing and understanding and using it to my advantage that they don't just wander the countryside. They have specific places they like to be, and you're best to just hunt in those places, even if you're not seeing them. And that's this story. I'll tell you the moral of the story first. But it happened back in 2013. It was in Colorado. I live in Idaho. But, you know, I hunt Colorado as often as I can get a tag, and I've been hunting Colorado, you know, since 93, so what, almost 25 years on and off. I've probably had a half a dozen tags down there. And this was a muzzleloader hunt. It was in Colorado has a September muzzleloader hunt on the western half of their state. And, you know, you're hunting with a primitive weapon by Colorado rules. You know, they don't shoot real far. So, you know, you got to really be a good stalker to really get a chance and everything. And I had hunted it the year before, and I must not be a good stalker because I didn't get a good buck. Although I saw some, and it kind of reminded me why, you know, hunting in September can be good, because if you can find bucks, you can pattern them a little bit. I use that term loosely, but you know, you can kind of at least predict where they're going to be from a day-to-day basis. So I got the tag again in 2013, and I talked about this a little bit in my book. Some of your best intel is going to come from your own scouting and your own hunting, in particular just meeting people in the area that you're hunting. And they don't even have to be hunters. In fact, it's almost better if they're not, because as hunters, we're pretty secretive. But, you know, you talk to some of the local people, and, oh, yeah, we always see deer back over here or whatever. And it was because I'd hunted it the year before, you know, I'd met some people, and, you know, they'd given me some tips. Well, one of the guys that I had stayed in touch with had a friend that was a cop. And I got the tag in, you know, July or whatever you draw them. And you know, I called this guy and let him know, hey, I'll be down there in September. You know, if you know of any good bucks or any places I should go scout, you know, let me know. My schedule was pretty full that year, so I couldn't go pre-scout the unit in the summer. And, you know, plus I had hunted it the year before, so, you know, I wasn't starting blind. And, oh, it must have been August or so. He texts me a picture, and he's like, hey, man, my friend's a cop, and he took this picture of these bucks running across the road the other night on his dash cam. So, you know, this picture looks like something off of, you know, Cops, and you know, got the date on the bottom, you know, and okay, all this stuff. And sure enough, dude, three bucks crossing the road in front of this cop car. I mean, it's looking right over the hood. They're 20 yards in front of him. And two of them are whoppers. You know, we're talking 190 to, you know, 200-inch style deer. The other one was just kind of a dinky three-point. And, you know, when the guy sent it to me, he even said, now, it's not that these bucks are really very huntable. He goes, this is down on the edge of some private property. There's a bunch of hay fields right here. He says, I just wanted to kind of get you excited that, you know, there could be some bucks like this around. And I said, well, hey, that's great. But, you know, because I knew enough about mule deer, I knew that I'll bet, unless those bucks are just living on the private all the time and they're not huntable, you know, they still might get onto public somewhere. And that's how Colorado is. It's a big checkerboard of public and private. So I asked him, you know, are you willing to tell me where it is? Oh, yeah, man, it's just right up here outside of town. You know, go 2 miles, take a left, and, you know, it's right on that road. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll at least go look at the country when I get there. And I wasn't really planning on hunting over there. So when I got down to Colorado, I set my camp up, and I was just hunting. It was just a road camp, not hunting from the road, but hiking from the road. But so I had a road camp, and then my plan was just to kind of hit the places in the unit that I knew and, you know, be able to come back to camp every night. And well, where this guy had seen these deer was, gosh, it was quite a ways away. It was probably like 10 or 15 miles. And, you know, some of it dirt roads, you know, kind of hard to get to. So I thought, well, I should at least go over there and look for these deer. And I think I hunted in a different spot opening day, some of my more higher probability areas. Must have not have seen anything. I can't remember, but I didn't end up hunting there. And so it's probably about the second or third day that I made it over to where this guy said. And I got there in the afternoon and kind of drove around those hay fields he was talking about. And there was a, in that dash cam picture, there was a shed off in the distance. I could just see it in the dash cam picture. My goodness, I found that shed. And I kind of figured out from that where this picture had been taken. And this guy was right. Those were hay filled bucks. They were headed out into the alfalfa. But they had come off of a little piece of BLM ground on the other side of the road. And it was a small piece of BLM ground, just a few hundred acres. But I thought, well, you know, and he had taken the picture in the evening. And because remember, I had a time stamp on it. So I could tell that these bucks were probably bedding back in that BLM ground, and maybe they're just hitting this hay field at night, because every piece of private property is different. Big bucks, you know, you'll see a few towny bucks that'll just hang out right out in the open all day where nobody can shoot at them. But I still find most wild bucks, they might hit private and, you know, be down where you can't hunt them, but they only hit it at night, and then they're usually bedding where there's cover. Well, if that cover's on public, they don't care. They'll just go hide in the cover. And so I spent, oh, John, I can't remember, maybe a day kind of hiking around that BLM and kind of figured out, yeah, there's a couple places they could hide back here. I found some old buck beds, but there were no deer back there then, you know. And by now it had been like a month since he'd taken that picture. And so I kind of figured out, well, they're not going to be here. But while I was on that piece of BLM, John, I could see across that valley, and that valley is all private. It's probably like 2 or 3 miles of just, you know, kind of rural houses, you know, hay fields, stuff like that. And then at the far side of the valley, there's a great big cedar knob. I mean, more like a cedar mountain. And by cedars, I mean junipers, heavy, heavy cover. And those hay
PJs.
fields went right up to that juniper. And I thought, you know, it would probably be worth, you know, at least getting out here and glassing at daylight, you know, see if I could see those bucks if they're leaving these hay fields. I mean, who knows? There's a few pieces of public around here. Maybe they're going on public. So I got over there the next morning, and like I said, it was quite a drive from where I was at. So, you know, I had to get up at some outrageous time and get over there, and climbed up on that BLM piece, and I started glassing. I glassed all those hay fields, and there was a few deer scattered about. And it was getting a little bit later in the morning, maybe, you know, half hour after sunrise. You're kind of starting to think you're not going to see deer anymore. And clear over on the other side of that valley, literally 3 miles away, John, I'm looking through a 25 to 50 Swarovski ATS, and I think I was glassing with my 15 power Vortex Kaibabs. I spotted some bucks up against those cedars. Now, there's a little neighborhood over there. For those of you that think Colorado is all wild country, it's not. It's the weirdest place in the world. Sometimes there's neighborhoods right out in the deer country. So there's a little neighborhood over there of maybe, I don't know, 40, 50 houses, and these bucks are right at the end of that neighborhood, coming out of that hay field, heading up into the cedars. And I just caught them in my optics as they were leaving the field, and I could tell a couple of them had good antlers, even at that distance.
Right.
They got into the junipers, and real thick band of junipers, and then up the mountain, maybe, I don't know, 500 yards, there was a power line that came through there. And so you know how they clear the power line so, you know, trees don't fall on the lines and everything. And so there was a cut in the power line that was probably a couple hundred yards wide, and I thought, well, I'm not going to glass them in the junipers. I'll just keep watching that spot, and maybe I'll get lucky, and they'll cross it. And so, you know, I'm kind of glassing that spot, and gosh, I'm noticing there's, like, all kinds of shiny objects over there. And I get looking at it, dude, and it's like a place where people have thrown a bunch of junk, you know, car hoods and, you know, 50-gallon barrels. And, in fact, I'm looking at it, and I've looked at my map the last couple of days, so I'm pretty sure that Cedar Mountain is public, but, you know, you're never quite sure. And I thought, you know, maybe that's somebody's junkyard, or maybe it's just a dumping ground for the public. I don't know. I'm sitting there looking at it, and, man, as luck would have it, those bucks come walking right across that opening. And I got to look at them, not a long time, maybe 30 seconds. And, you know, they're a long ways away. I'm looking west. I've got the sun behind me. So they're illuminated fairly well, and the best I can tell you is there's a couple of really big bucks in that group, and it's a big group of bucks, 7, 8, 9, 10 bucks. You know, they're all batched up in September. And I thought, well, I've been here, whatever, 2-3 days. That's the best lead I have. I should at least go over there and get some intel and see if they're even huntable. You know, looking on my map, it looks like they are. They're not huntable in the hayfield, but, you know, once they get on that mountain. So I go over there, John, and geez, I end up having to drive right through that neighborhood to get to where those bucks came out of the field. You know, and on my map, there were some other roads I thought I could go in a different way, and you just couldn't. And that neighborhood was pretty new houses. There probably wasn't a house in there that was, you know, over 5 years old. And, you know, you could just look and just tell there it was a nice neighborhood, nice cars parked out on the street, you know, clean houses, you know, and thought, you know, this is just kind of probably where the ritzy people of this little rural area live. And so I get to the end of the neighborhood where they, and they're still building that neighborhood. And at the end of the neighborhood, the road just ends. And there's a little tiny cul-de-sac with no houses in it. They haven't built any houses in it yet. Right. And at the end of that cul-de-sac, I can see little like motorbike tracks that have been going out of it. And there's not any no trespassing signs. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm right at the edge of the public here. You know, this is probably why they've stopped building right here.
Right.
And, you know, I get out and I hike around. And sure enough, there that little cul-de-sac turns into a trail that goes turns and goes back behind those houses and heads up that juniper knob. But I'm still sort of nervous, you know, like, gosh, is this private? Is this public? I don't know. Well, all of a sudden I hear this bop, 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 bop. Here's this guy over here mowing his lawn. You know, I don't even, I mean, I'm dressed in orange. I mean, I don't even feel like I'm on a hunt. But, you know, he waves at me, and I thought, well, he looks sort of friendly. So I went over there and asked him, and, you know, I'm not packing a gun or anything. I'm just like, yeah, my map says that the public ground is right there. Is it okay to hunt up that trail? And, dude, I was really lucky. He was not a hunter. And some of those people, I don't want to pick on Colorado. I've seen the same thing in Idaho. They can be real snobby towards you, and, you know, they'll lie to you that, no, that's not public. You got to leave. And he was really cool. You know, he was like, hey, dude, that's really cool. You come over here and hunt. I've never seen anybody hunting back here. And he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, that trail goes back up on that BLM. You know, we go hiking back there all the time. And, yeah, you know, feel free. And I'm like, well, I mean, I've got a muzzleloader. Am I going to freak anybody out? He goes, it's public ground, man. Do what you want. And he said, you know, just remember kind of how the neighborhood lays. You're not shooting back towards us. I said, oh, yeah, no problem. So I go back there scouting, you know, and it's like noon, you know, hotter, middle of the day. And I kind of figured out how to get back in there. And I actually got to the spot where I could see where those bucks had come out of those fields and gone up into the cedars and crossed the power line cut. So, you know, I'm getting some pretty good intel here. And I walked back to that cut. It wasn't very far, maybe 3/4 of a mile from those houses. You know, I was back there in 15, 20 minutes. And sure enough, that cut butted up against some – like I told you, it was kind of a rural area. There was an old house back there. In fact, there was a couple of them. You couldn't see them from the road. And that guy that lived there was like a junkyard. You know, he had old cars out there and, you know, buses cut in half. You know, it was just a real junky place. But from what I could tell, the public butted up right behind his place. And to me, it looked like he'd been littering on the public. I wasn't sure. So I went back to the truck, drove around clear out of the neighborhood and went around to that house to knock on the door, you know, and just figure out, maybe the guy's a nice guy and he'll do the same thing. Say, yeah, go right back there and go deer hunting. Well, he wasn't home. There was two or three other houses there. Nobody was home. And I thought, well, I know I'm good to hunt on the public. You know, that guy said it was public and, you know, I'm going to be fine. So, you know, it's only like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. There is nothing to do. And it's, you know, it's September. Gosh, it doesn't get dark till late. So I don't want to drive clear back to my camp. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, I don't want to just sit here in the truck. I don't want to get back in there where the deer are. You don't know what the wind is going to do. You know, I don't want to be spreading my scent around in there all afternoon. What my plan was is just to wait for him to get up and just see if I could, you know, ambush him. And as I was driving up there, I passed a public library and, you know, just a little stone building, you know, and it was, again, this is rural Colorado. I'm not saying the towns because I don't want to give away my spot, but I thought, well, it's a public library. I mean, I guess I can go down there. So, you know, I go down there, I get rid of my hunter orange vest, you know, tried to put something on so I kind of look like a halfway normal person. And I went in the library, dude, and I just sat there for like 3 hours, you know, balancing my checkbook, you know, reading. I mean, I'm feeling like a big puss, you know, like, shouldn't I be out deer hunting? And I'm like, well, I know where the bucks are. I'll just wait. So finally it starts getting late enough in the day. I'm thinking, okay, I probably better get back up in there. And so, you know, I drive back up through the neighborhood. I got my gun already kind of down before I got back in the neighborhood so I could just park and get out and start walking. You know,
I didn't
want to be questioned by anybody. And so I get up there, you know, park my truck, you know, where I still remember this guy's name was Paul. And he was still out there. He was still like in his yard, you know, and I waved at him, you know, he gave me the thumbs up. And so I'm hiking back behind these houses. And dude, this is what I mean. It's like the twilight zone. Here I am hunting, you know, what I think are giant deer. And here's these little kids, you know, swinging on swing sets, you know, 50 yards from me. You know, I'm walking behind their houses. You know, some of them are scared of me. Some of them are like, hey, mister, is that your gun? You know, I mean, it's just like, this can't be real. I'm back here talking to people and I'm going deer hunting. And, you know, a few people kind of gave me some crusty looks, you know, you're walking behind their houses and everything, but I'm all in public. They can't stop me. They know it.
Right.
And, so I get back there and I sat down in that power line cut and I kind of sat down in the middle of it. And I thought, well, I'm right in the middle of it. It's about 300 yards long. If the bucks show up anywhere in here, they're going to be within range. You know, I can shoot about 150 both ways. So I sat down, John, I don't remember, a couple hours before dark. And I sat and I sat and I sat. And you know, you really start doubting yourself. I mean, I'm sitting 40 yards from a 50-gallon barrel. And, you know, and I remember there was an old camper, like, just destroyed. You know, it'd been out in the weather for years. It was kind of at the far end of that cut, and and like I said, it was. I think that guy was like parking his stuff on the public because it was on the public. And so, you know, I'm just sitting here looking around at all this stuff, thinking, "What am I doing? You know, this is. I just can't even believe I'm deer hunting here." And it starts getting along towards dark, and you know how it is when you're sitting in the junipers, you can see underneath them a little bit.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm kind of glassing as far as I can, and you know, really 150 yards about as far as I can see, and I see deer legs coming towards me at probably about 100 yards, but they're not in the cut. They're skirting the cut and they're back in the junipers, I don't know, 20, 30 yards. And I'm like, man, those are deer legs. And, you know, I look for a minute and then I wouldn't see them. And then I'd see a couple more. And I'm like, you know, there's multiple deer right there. This is where those bucks were. I better get ready. And I was shooting an adjustable peep sight on my muzzleloader that you could take the peep sight out and allow a little bit more light in, you know, if it was getting dark. And it was getting, you know, I think the sun had set or it was very close to setting. So I checked my peep and it was getting a little bit dark, I thought. So I screwed the peep out of it and I dropped it.
Oh,
and when I dropped it, I reached forward to grab it. And as I reached forward to grab it, freaking whopper buck stepped out of those junipers. And he walked out about 5 yards, and he had been out of the junipers, and I didn't see him, so he was out about 5 yards when I dropped that. And when I reached forward, I looked up and locked eyes with him. And, dude, he was over 200. He was one of those bucks I had seen in that morning. He was over 30 wide. I didn't put the glass on him because, I mean, I'm just frozen. But I could see. I had pretty good eyes back then. I didn't have to wear these glasses. And
yeah, me too.
I thought, oh, that's a freaking whopper. Well, he got all jacked up and nervous when he saw me, and he took about 3 steps forward, and it dropped him down into just a little dip in the terrain. And so now all I could see was about 4 inches of the top of his back and, of course, his antlers.
Right.
And I got my glass up then and I looked 120 yards, I think, what it was. I mean, he's in range. You know, I'm getting the gun ready, but I can't shoot. I'm thinking, you know, I only got a 4-inch target to aim at. You know, I'm not shooting a rifle here.
Right.
And I'm watching him for a second, and I'm just getting this sinking feeling as I'm looking at him that, you know, all he's got to do is walk, because they're at the end of the cut. He's got to walk about 3 yards, and he's in the cover. I'm thinking, oh, man, he just needs to step out of that hole. And as I'm watching him, I just see him crank his head and look back into the trees from where he came. And I thought, mm-hmm. okay, well, there's other bucks coming. And about that time, another good buck stepped out. And I glanced over at him. I didn't put the glass on him. I knew I was already busted. I already knew the yardage. So, you know, I didn't move much, but I looked at him with my naked eye. And, you know, he's totally broadside. And he looked at that other deer. When that other deer was looking at me, he looked at me. I mean, they play off of each other. They know what's right. going on. He knew there was danger by that other deer's posture. So he turns and looks at me. I can see he's well outside his ears, you know, 27, 28 inches wide. Deep forks. I mean, we're talking, you know, well over 180 buck. You know, and so I have a chance at a 200 plus that's down in a hole that I know, unless just some miracle of God, he steps out of that hole and stops. And you know, they're on edge. You can tell they're about to go. And so I made like a 1 second decision. I'm taking that other buck. I swung the muzzle loader. I was already down on one knee. Pow! And smoke and all that other stuff. And you know, as the smoke settles, I probably couldn't see for about 1 second. I see those two deer swing their butts towards me, and they start heading away right into the cover. And you know, I never would have got a shot at that bigger buck. I mean, he was instantly in the cover. And I can kind of see them bouncing away by me, and they run by that stupid camper. I mean, it was just weird, just like, gosh, they're running into this guy's yard. I mean, what did I just do? Oh, crap. And then I had to remind myself, no, you're on public. You're fine. So I go over there. I get on their tracks and literally walk right by that camper. And their tracks are right there. And here's a spot of blood on a rock. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I hit that buck. You know, I was even thinking I hadn't hit him because I had to shoot so fast. So I got on their tracks. They peeled off the mountain and went back down behind that guy's house into a bunch of heavy cedars. And I got on their tracks, and he wasn't bleeding real bad, but it wasn't super hard to find blood. I mean, he might go, you know, 10 yards with no blood at all, but then there'd be a little spot. And I thought, well, this is good. At least I'm on the right buck. Their tracks split. One went to the right. And then one continued straight down the hill. And so I followed it out. Sure enough, there was blood on that. So I knew that biggest buck had turned and gone. And I just stayed on that other one. I didn't go a lot further, John. And I got into some really heavy junipers. The ground was just bare. I mean, if you ducked down, you could see really well. There wasn't a lot of understory. So I really slowed down, and I kind of moved forward. And sure enough, I see a big white ass in the trees ahead of me. And I can't remember if I think I had to kneel to shoot. And, you know, I got down. It was him. I could tell. He was about 70 yards, and he was looking straight back at me. And all I could shoot at was the end of his tail. Now, I would never shoot at a buck that had not been hit by shooting at the base of their tail. But, you know, I knew this buck was hit. And plus, he's headed for the private. I need to get him killed.
Right.
And so I just put it right on his tail, and I touched her off. And I was, you know, 99% sure I'd hit him. With all the smoke, I couldn't see him, and he disappeared back in the trees. So I got up there. Sure enough, I could tell by the hair and everything I'd hit him. Well, John, it's getting so dark now, and, you know, he's so close to what I think is the private. I'm thinking, I got two bullets in this buck. I am not going to keep pushing him. And, you know,
right.
We're about a half a mile from that neighborhood, but there's nothing stopping him from turning and kind of going that way. And I thought, oh, God, that'll be a disaster. He'll end up down in there.
Yeah, so I just somebody's swing set.
What's that?
I said I'll end up in somebody's swing set.
Yeah, exactly. Tangled up in a swing set with a bunch of little kids out there looking at him. So I backed out of there, got back to the pickup. We had a full moon that night, I remember, just driving back to my camp with a big gut ache, like, oh, crap, you know, where's this buck going to end up? And you know, I hope he doesn't end up on the private. And, you know, just one of those nights you don't sleep very well. I made myself a couple speed loaders, got up at the crack of midnight and got back over there so that I was in there by, you know, the first light. I got back on his tracks. It had rained a little bit that night, and other deer had moved during the night, and but I was still able to find his track. And I moved slow, you know, which is the best way to do it, but I was moving extra slow because I thought, you know, he's still not on the private. If I can get him killed up here, it just saves the politics of it, you know, because right. Now I got to go knock on doors, and, you know, and plus you just never know if somebody hates you, you know, what are they going to do? So I tracked him. I can't remember, maybe 300 yards, but it took me like an hour and a half, because I'm going track by track. And I come up on a little rise. Dude, I'm right at the edge of the private now. There's a hay field below me. You know, I'm right at the edge of the cedars. And I look down there, and I can see his antler sticking up out of the grass. And so I'm like, awesome, other than I think he's on private. Oh, he had got down low enough where he's right at kind of the edge of the field where they don't plant, and he's right in that deep, high grass. And I'm like, crap. So I thought, well, you know, it is what it is. I'm just going to go back down there, and I'm going to knock on that door. I can see which place owns it just by the property boundaries of the field. And all of a sudden, dude, I mean, I told you, this is the twilight zone. Here comes a pack of frickin' dogs. And, I mean, there must have been 15 dogs in this thing. And we're talking blue heelers and red heelers, shepherds. And, I mean, oh, they're just going crazy. You know, they heard me back there. And I'm like, God, are they mean? I mean, am I going to get into a pack of dogs? They're coming right at me. So, you know, I'm just like, oh, hopefully the landowner walks out here and he can see I'm on the public. I'm trying to do it right. And, you know, the dogs are hauling ass towards me, and, you know, they're getting within like 10 feet. And I'm thinking, well, it's only going to be worse if I shoot somebody's dog. So, you know, just hopefully they're nice. And they all kind of get around me, you know, grr, grr, and, you know, they're sniffing at me, and I'm trying to talk calmly to them, and kind of figured out that, you know, they're all nice. They think I'm nice. They're not too worried about me. And I'm about maybe 70 yards from that deer. Well, they got on that blood, and they got to the deer before I did. And, you know, they're over there smelling it and everything. And I thought, well, I'll walk over to the deer and, you know, make sure everything's good there. I got over there, and, you know, that buck had probably died within 15 minutes when I shot him the night before. And got the dog shoot away from him, you know, threw some mud balls at him, got him to run out in the field. Of course, there was one little dog that fell in love with me. He would not leave, you know, and he's just like curled up next to me. And I thought, well, I'm going to use this to my advantage. You know, I'm going to take this one down to the landowner. And then when I knock on the door, you know, I've got Fido here, his dog, and I've rescued him from the forest. And so I get him on a little piece of rope, and, you know, he's a nice little dog. He's probably, you know, just a 6 month old or something. So I go walking through the field. I leave my gun up there, and, you know, I'm just praying. I hope these people are nice, because I'm trespassing right now. I didn't trespass to shoot the deer, but, you know, if they're like, hey, we don't like you, we're calling the cops, then I got to deal with all that drama. So I get down there, and I knock on the door. Nobody's around. Nobody.
Of course.
And I'm thinking, God, what do I do? You know, I mean, the buck needs cleaned. I guess I could go do that, and, you know, I'll come back down here later. I'm probably 300 or 400 yards from that house, you know, just across a big hay field. So I start heading back up there, and all of a sudden I hear a motorbike. And I look behind me, and here comes a guy on a motorbike, and he's riding towards me. And I'm thinking, oh, well, here goes. I'm busted. And he come riding up. He's like, hey, man, I saw you knocking on my boss's door. What's going on? I said, well, you know, peace between you and me, bud. I said, I know I'm not on the right property here. I said, but I shot a deer back up here last night, and I said, I'm glad to go up there and show you where the blood went and everything. And I tracked him down, and he died at the back of your field. And, you know, I want to retrieve him. And he's like, oh, dude, my boss is out of town for like a month. And he says, I really appreciate you coming down here. He goes, I actually heard you shoot last night. And he says, that's not totally out of common. We know people hunt back there a little bit. I mean, you know, he's just such a relief talking to this guy.
Nice.
And he's like, yeah, you know, go ahead and get your deer. That's no problem at all. I'll tell my boss and everything, and you know, have a good one. And so, you know, totally relieved. Totally. So, you know, I go up there, I get the buck taken care of. I brought a little pack frame with me, I had a little Nimrod pack frame, got him quartered up. You know, it's probably, I don't know, 9 o'clock by now. And so he's been laying probably 12-13 hours.
Out, yeah.
And as I opened him up, he was fine, but his back quarter on the right side was just just a little bit rank. Not so much I was going to leave it, because that's the other thing I thought. You know, I'm not out of the woods yet here. I still got that neighborhood to go through. I don't want to be busted for not packing enough meat out of here. So I got him all ready, and, you know, I've learned a long time ago, don't pack out more than a half a deer at a time if you like your back. So I pack him out to the truck, and I get out there. It's getting pretty late. You know, it's probably 2 o'clock, and the adventure continues. Here is a little brand new blue, I'll call it a Prius, I don't know if it was, and they're parked right behind my truck so I can't back up. And I'm like, why is that car right behind my truck? This, you know, somebody doesn't park that way unless they don't want you to leave. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. So, you know, back through the swing sets, back behind the houses, you know, I got this deer, I got the antlers on me and everything. And I go down there and I start hiking down that trail. You know, the truck's like 100 yards now. I had viewed that car from like 300 yards away through the trees, you know, so it took me a while to get down there. Well, I get down there and there's a lady sitting in it. And I'm thinking, yeah, what is she doing, you know? And so I come walking up and she gets out of the car and I'm happily married, but I'm not blind. She's a knockout. I mean, this is a beautiful lady, you know, and I'm out here in the woods. I got blood all over me. I mean, my hair's sticking up. I hardly got any sleep last night. I don't smell real good. And, you know, and here she comes walking up to me, and she's in a, you know, nice suit pant and, you know, dressed to the nine and, you know, looking pretty official, actually. And I'm like, hi, can I help you? And she's like, yeah, I'm actually from the public works of this little town that's down the road. And she says, I had a complaint that you are up here parked on public property. And I said, yeah. And luckily I knew that guy's name. And I said, Paul, who happens to live right there, told me that we are fine to park here to access that piece of public property. Now, these people are not used to you knowing the facts of how things work. And, you know, there's easements in Colorado. And, you know, if there's a trail right there, you know, they legally they can block it off. But, you know, if they do, they, you know, people will tell you, well, I had done all that homework. I had my map and I showed her that, hey, I'm fine to go back there. This is a legally harvested deer. And she's getting a little perturbed with me because I'm not just bowing. And
right. So
she got in my face, but maybe not as much as a lady, you know, more like a lady gets in your face. And she just got real close to me. Well, you know, she had just got back from lunch and her breath smelled like a garlic pizza that had gone bad. And I still remember this, you know, she's kind of sort of chewing me out a little bit, you know, like, well, hey, you know, you're still on the pavement here. And this guy back over across the street said that you parked in the median, which was like this flower bed they had in the cul-de-sac that hadn't been planted yet. She said, you were parked in there, and that's damaging public property. And I'm thinking, God, lady, not only does your breath stink, you don't have your facts straight. So I let her kind of rip on me for a minute, and I said, ma'am, I did not park in that flower bed. And I said, it rained last night. But it didn't rain hard enough to wash out my tracks. I said, if I parked in there, let's go over there. There'll be tracks. And that really caught her off guard because you can tell, you know, she's never thought about tracks in her life. I said, seriously, if that guy's right and I parked in there, my tracks will be there. Dude, we went over there. There hadn't been anything in that thing in 6 months. You know, you could just tell by the crust on the dirt. And I said, so there you go, ma'am. I said, I respect your position. You know, she's not a cop, but she's trying to act like one. I said, but you can see someone is lying that I have not parked in there. And she had to agree. She's like, you're right. You're right. Nobody's parked in here. I said, what it is that guy across the street, he just don't want anybody back here. And he wants everybody to be buffaloed that's not BLM back there. I said, but that's not right. The reason he lives here is because he wanted to be on the border of public. I mean, I had my own little defense for the whole thing. And so her and I shook hands and went our separate ways. She ended up being pretty cool. I never did tell her that her breast smelled like the back end of an elephant. But like I said, she was pretty hot. So anyways, I go back in. I get the rest of the deer. You know, I bring it out and, you know, get it in the truck. And as I'm leaving the neighborhood, and by the way, that buck was 191. He's right there, if you can see him.
Nice.
He was 191. He was my first buck with a muzzle loader. I was so tickled pink. But as I drove out of that neighborhood, I thought, I cannot believe what just happened in the last 36 hours, you know, with the traffic cop.
Sounds like all my hunts.
Well, yeah, dude, maybe, you know, but I'm used to a little more wildness to my hunts, and, you know, it was just weird. And so I told you there was a moral to the story. The moral of the story is, I've learned as I've gotten older, hunt where the bucks are, not where you want them to be. Yeah. And those bucks had just figured out that we can go feed in that alfalfa at night. We can bet on the public during the day. No right-minded deer hunter is going to come back here and hunt us behind all these houses. And if I hadn't ran into that guy that was so nice to me that was mowing his lawn, I probably would have chickened out going back there. I probably really would have. And, you know, there was a little luck involved. Luckily, that guy that came up to me on the motorbike, you know, he was cool. He could see I tried to do it right. But, you know, you just never know when that stuff's happening.
No, it's tough.
But the moral of the story is hunt where they're at.
Yep, absolutely. Well, super cool. That's I've had similar experiences, not quite such a saga of yours, but because like I said, when we had the first podcast, you know, I hunt in New York a lot and I hunt on Long Island. So it's like little itty bitty pockets. I'm talking like 5-6 acres of public land in between like $1 million homes out in the Hamptons. Mm-hmm. And I've killed deer and they goes, you know, I've shot deer because it's bow only there and they end up in somebody's backyard and you're like, yeah. You know,
no fun at all. And you know, you're kind of just at the mercy of whoever you run into. And,
yeah.
And that's why that when you asked for an outrageous story, I thought, well, there's the one. Cause that around here in the West, it's not usually that way. Colorado a little bit, but even that was like the extreme.
Yeah.
And, I'll never forget it. And it really is one of my best typical bucks. And,
cool.
But every time I look at him, I just shake my head.
Awesome. Well, good deal. Thanks for coming back on and sharing that with us.
You bet, man.
I'm definitely going to have you on when we get a little bit after the spring, maybe after the spring here, when we start thinking about scouting for deer, and we'll do some more technical
good, man.
Mule Deer Podcast. Thank
you. I'd love to talk about deer hunting, so just let me know.
All right, bud. Have a good one.
Thanks again.
Bye.